From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week via Skype, Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor. And we welcome panelist Star Parker, radio and television commentator and founder and president of the Center for Urban Renewal and Education. And our moderator is Dan Revive, columnist for Newsday.
Hi, everyone. Here are the issues. The coronavirus, COVID-19, takes more victims. It has slowed down in some countries, but it's getting worse in others. The total number of cases growing, over 9.5 million people worldwide, included almost 500,000 deaths. Here in the United States, the death toll is over 120,000. But President Donald Trump says treatments are being developed, a vaccine is in the works, and his main focus is saying the economy will rapidly recover. The president flew to Oklahoma and to Arizona, addressing supporters at rallies where they stood or sat close to one another, very few of them wearing masks. Racial justice and the accusation that many police are biased against Black people, still a big topic here in the United States, sparking protests, including some violence and attacks on statues. We'll talk about that. And here in Washington, D.C., there were moves in Congress to restrict what police can do and perhaps make sure that so-called bad cops are punished. But Democrats and Republicans could not agree on legislation. Those topics and more on Issues in the News. Linda Feldman, let's talk about President Trump and the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. Is the president, in your view, trying to minimize the continuing danger of COVID-19?
He is. I mean, he is trying to kind of talk us into a recovery in terms of the caseload and our ability to pull out of this, our ability to get back to work, to revive the economy. But the facts on the ground don't look good. As you said, we're at over 120,000 deaths in this country, nearly 2 million people infected, and you've got some trends really going in the wrong direction. I mean, some of our biggest states are at record levels of cases, Florida and Texas, for example. Donald Trump had made that comment about wanting to reduce testing. Then he said he was kidding. Then he said he wasn't. So I don't quite understand what his goal is here, but the reality is that in some places, the federal government is backing away from its support for testing, including in Texas, and that's concerning to a lot of people.
The president said that testing for coronavirus is a two-edged sword, as he put it. It can be good in some ways, but bad because it makes the number of cases look high. And, well, in effect, he indicates that doesn't look good. Star Parker, it's your first time on Issues in the News. Welcome. Now, I notice on your online TV show that often you're defending President Trump. Is he being serious and focused enough about the dangers of coronavirus?
I think he spent quite a bit of time being serious and focused on what the science was telling us early on when most didn't know any information about the coronavirus. But the more we endured and shut down the country, I believe that the president has tapped into a sentiment of a lot of Americans that say, let's just get back to as much normal as we can. We want to go back to work. We are adults. We want to see if there's an opportunity for us to self-govern. So I'm not sure if he's in leadership or is it the people that are pushing him to be the leader that says, let's reopen our economy. Yes, it is very serious that we have over 100,000 deaths as well as the virus is still spreading, but an emphasis has been taken away from that particular pandemic and concern. And a lot of it is because the conversation has shifted now to race and race issues.
Well, of course, America has to talk about a lot of things at once. I think all of us being in the media, we sometimes wonder if the media does focus on just one thing. But, you know, we can broaden this conversation to the presidential election campaign in this country. Americans will vote on November 3rd, just over 4 months away. It's getting close. Now, Linda Feldman, you cover U.S. politics intensely. Does President Trump believe that his handling of coronavirus is a winning issue for him?
It's hard to know what he believes, but he clearly knows that his handling of the pandemic will be a very important element of how swing voters are willing to vote in November. So most American voters already know which way they're going to go on Donald Trump come November. But there are people who are watching very closely on a number of things, including the handling of the pandemic. And I think Donald Trump often looks at things that are happening in this country as kind of a referendum on him. He sees the statistics as reflecting on him personally, whether it be through the stock market or unemployment rates or COVID caseloads. And, you know, he famously said early on that he didn't want the people on the cruise ship to be tested because it would make the numbers look bad. So he seems at times to be more interested in how news events reflect on him versus how they just as news events in and of themselves.
Well, we have to keep in mind that the president also feels that most of the news media are unfair to him, always looking for the negative. Star, what do you think? The coronavirus as a political issue, does it help or hurt President Trump's campaign?
Since the coronavirus has become a political issue, it depends on how both sides play. If we see a new outburst in our country, as some of the numbers are coming in, then perhaps by November, people will be still concerned. But I think that in this situation, he may have his cards on the economy, because he knows when people are faring well economically, they feel a little bit better about keeping the status quo. So I think the jury's still out. We are now opening up different areas here in Washington, D.C. We've moved into phase two to see, can we self-govern? Can people get out and about and not see those numbers go back up? Is it a long shot? Sure it is. Does he take it personally? Yes. But, you know, 60-something million people kind of like that edge. They like him being that entrepreneurial, what did one author call it, a productive narcissist, so that we can kind of set the country straight and their opinion. So I see the country is breaking down now into these two areas, to where some look to government to answer a whole lot of questions, and others say, leave us alone. We would prefer to try to work out our own personal details as locally as possible. Is there a middle that can swing the election one way or another? We won't know that until October, in my opinion.
Of course, November 3rd, then, is the real test, the voting. And who are the two men we expect to see on the ballot, of course? Donald Trump for re-election and Joe Biden, former vice president, as the Democrat running for president. He's no longer confining himself to his home in the state of Delaware. Biden has been out giving a few speeches. Linda, coronavirus and the Biden campaign. Is he mentioning COVID-19 a lot?
Well, he is. I mean, he's using this as an opportunity to attack the president, accuse him of incompetence, and recognizing that a lot of the response is up to the state and local level. There is a federal role to play. There is an overarching leadership that Joe Biden expects of the president. Now, as of right now, the election is shaping up to be a referendum on Donald Trump. I mean, by definition, he's the incumbent president. He is presiding over what's happening, whether it's his fault or not. As we get closer to Election Day, it will become a choice. A lot of Republicans have been noting that Joe Biden is running a very low-key campaign. They joke that he's hiding in his basement. And as you noted, he's been getting out more. This has been a very, very, very challenging time for everybody, for Donald Trump, for the governors, for Americans. And when Donald Trump appears to be damaging himself, then the political theory is that you allow your opponent to keep damaging himself and don't get in his way. So there is an argument for Joe Biden to stay relatively quiet, but that does open him up to the charges that he's absent, that he's hiding, that he's an old man, incapable of being sharp. So Joe Biden, I think, has to kind of thread the needle here in terms of staying engaged, but also allowing any blame for the handling of the pandemic to fall on his opponent.
The president and the campaign, the Trump campaign, have been mocking Biden, no question about it. But Star Parker, what about that theory that Joe Biden actually doesn't have to give many speeches? The opinion polls suggest that right now he might be 10 percentage points ahead of President Trump. And so if Biden's smart, he won't do much.
Well, that could be. I mean, there is a precedent. King Solomon said that even a fool seems wise if he keeps his mouth shut. So sometimes just playing low key can kind of work. I'm of the thought that Biden might not be the candidate. We all have to admit that there is something going on beyond just the political of him versus Trump. People age, they do have to make new decisions. And if his time is up for not being able to be on the political stage again, I think the Democrats are perhaps thinking about that. It could be even why they moved their convention till after the Republican convention so that they can assess, is this going to be the candidate? I actually have $5 on the governor of New Jersey. I think they're going to switch Biden out.
Well, Linda Feldman, you cover politics. Should I put any stock in that, or it's just a one in a million shot that the Democrats will dump Biden?
So I have to say to Star, that's really interesting. I hadn't heard the Phil Murphy theory. And I would note Phil Murphy is the governor of New Jersey, a state that's faced huge challenges, obviously, with COVID. But I will note that Donald Trump and his wife recently had Bill Murphy and his wife over to dinner at President Trump's club in Bedminster, New Jersey. Phil Murphy says nice things about President Trump, so that would be certainly an interesting matchup. But I would take that bet that Joe Biden will be the nominee come August. He has the nomination locked up in terms of the results of the primaries, and short of some kind of terrible occurrence like, you know, major illness or even death, I just don't see how the Democrats have an internal coup and push him off the ticket.
Well, listen, Star Parker, you're reporting to us what some people are thinking. I think the Democratic Party will stick with Joe Biden. It is true that the Democrats are scaling back their summertime convention. They say because of COVID, the coronavirus, they don't want that many people gathered in one place. You can imagine that Donald Trump is not expressing that kind of concern about Republicans. He wants big, energetic get-togethers. Star, one other thing. I know on your TV show, you often have a lot of African-American activists and political observers. You know, the polls are indicating that among African-Americans, it could be around 90% for Biden, only 10% for Trump. That's kind of the way it was 4 years ago, Hillary Clinton versus Trump. Is that what you expect, or do you think the president's going to get more black support?
It depends on their strategy in the battleground states. And I know that the Trump administration is working aggressively on their strategy, what that's going to look like, to see if they can increase that number a couple of points. But back on the other part of this conversation about whether it will be Biden or not, I actually think that they have an opportunity as Democrats to engage society in a more positive message. What we're seeing right now is a referendum on Donald Trump, which was brought up already. I don't know that that's going to be enough to take us into next year with the black community, because the black community now is looking for serious answers. And COVID and whether we should be hiding away is not going to be enough to make the case that this is why Biden is not on the campaign trail, because the hypocrisy involved when we see the protesters out there. All of a sudden, Americans are able to gather and complain in the public square, but then we are not able to have conventions. So it's going to be interesting to see if they keep Joe Biden.
Thank you, Star. There's a lot more to talk about, but let's take a brief break.
Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on VOA's website at voanews.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype, Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor, Star Parker, radio and television commentator and founder and president of the Center for Urban Renewal and Education, and our moderator, Dan Revive, columnist for Newsday.
We were talking about black voters in the U.S. Many of them may be watching closely as America reacts to recent killings of unarmed black people by police in Minneapolis and Atlanta, for instance. Protests are continuing in many cities, and that includes here, America's capital, Washington. Star Parker, when the protesters pulled down statues of famous people, including soldiers who fought for the Confederacy in America's Civil War in the 1860s, but also people who owned slaves way back when, is this kind of protest what some people might call righteous anger?
people may try to make that case in America, but because of how America is designed with our fundamental principles rooted in Christianity and capitalism and a constitution which avails us to law and order, I think most Americans will conclude that if we are going to remove statues, we need to understand that this is the role of the locals to vote. And if they want those statues, vote. This is what government is about. City councils decide to take up or pull down, which is what we saw in Charlottesville. So this incredible growth of those that are just angry at all of America as if this is an evil country, so we need to erase our history, are similar to the youth that would go and cut themselves up because they didn't get their way. I believe that most Americans still want a civil society. So to move ourselves to where we're removing statues, that some people don't even know who that statue represents or what that statue represents, it will tire over time.
Well, this could be anger, but not righteous anger, as you're framing it. And Linda Feldman, President Trump has made this a big topic almost every day recently. He tweets or speaks against the removal of statues, saying they're part of our history, good or bad. And he's even suggesting there should be 10 years in prison for anyone who damages a statue. This is a big topic for him?
It is a big topic for him, and it's symbolically very important. I think a large distinction has to be made. I mean, first of all, I agree with Starr that none of these violence and mob tearing down of statues is never the answer. Some of this problem has been, as she points out, the failure of local governments to deal with these controversial statues and figure out a proper way to either keep them or remove them. And if they're removed, put them in a museum or something to not just wipe out key aspects of American history through mob violence. Donald Trump, I think he makes a mistake in pulling all these statues into one giant mass. So you have statues of George Washington and Abraham Lincoln being attacked. And at the same time, you have statues of Confederate generals who I think there's a much greater consensus should be removed, but he's lumping them all into one group. If he just stuck with George Washington and Abraham Lincoln and defended those statues, I think he would find much more political unity around this question. Although I have to point out that some of these statues of Abraham Lincoln depict a freed slave in a crouching position that makes the former slave look subservient, and that's offensive to some African Americans. I totally get that, but I think, you know, Donald Trump has inserted himself into a topic where there is some nuance, and he doesn't do nuance very well.
Star Parker, do you think most Americans actually care about this? Maybe the president had to respond because on TV, we're often seeing the crowds trying to pull down statues, and so he felt he had to say something.
I think that the president had to say something, in particular when it comes to federal statues, when it comes to erasing history, when it comes to mob violence. But your question, do most Americans care? Well, it depends on if they have statues in their communities. And this is why we need to maintain that these are local decisions that need to be made. There are many places in our society that you don't even see Confederate flags because it wasn't a part of the history of that particular state. Many communities don't have statues at all. So I think the model should be what happened in South Carolina, where within our own lifetime, we saw where the removal of the Confederate flag meant that they recalled their governor. Then the discussion moved to let's at least bring it down into a casement. We had still tension again. And then finally, because of a big tragedy, there was a consensus of the people of South Carolina to say, it's time for that Confederate flag to come down off of our Capitol. This is the best way. And in fact, even on Charlottesville, I think that when that city council and the mayor decided they wanted to bring that symbol down, that no one else should have gotten involved. That was their local business. But the fact that the alt-left and the alt-right decided to descend on Charlottesville, it then became a national concern. And that's when the president weighed in.
Last year, of course, a big controversy. This year, it's flared up in different ways. At the root of it this year, as we've been saying, is the relationship between the police and, well, you might say people of color. It's often put that way. And so should that also be a local issue, Star? Because there were efforts in Congress to try to pass some legislation that might restrict what police can do or in some way govern the relationships between police and the black community. But frankly, that didn't succeed in Congress. Republicans and Democrats couldn't agree. But is it an issue for a national solution?
No, it is not, in my opinion, which is probably why they didn't agree and not much gets done here in Washington, D.C., and it's probably why so much emphasis is put on the states and the local governing. When we think about what has happened with our policing, they have become civil servants with unions. So this is local. These are local decisions, and I think that if we're going to see reforms in policing, then this is extremely local to decide what that relationship should look like with the local union that governs over those police forces. When we talk about community policing, for instance, if it is written into the union contracts that the police officer cannot live in the community that he serves, this is something that that local area needs to reassess. When we talk about what's happening in our big cities, perhaps it's time for us to talk about they might be too big. This whole concept of too big to fail, they are failing. So perhaps we should consider that they could be carved out as smaller areas so that we can get much more close to the people that really need the services of the police and law and order, but also need to make sure that they can trust their police.
Linda, Congress did try to grapple with the issue. What did you hear? Do you think Democrats and Republicans have come close to some kind of legislation that says something about police in minority communities, or just forget about it?
So they're not going to agree. We're on the heels of a presidential election, and I think each side wants the issue. They don't want to solve this problem right now for political reasons. However, I think if you could get Democrats and Republicans in a room by themselves, I think they could find some common ground. That time isn't now. For example, and I disagree with Starr that there isn't a federal, potentially federal aspect to policing. The federal government is known for incentivizing local actions in a federal way, whether that's appropriate or not, they do that. Like, for example, like the use of seatbelts in cars, speed limits. You have federal minimums on that, but that should be a local decision. On policing, one thing I think where there could be agreement would be, say, to ban chokeholds. This is the way in which George Floyd died, with a policeman's knee on his neck. You could ban chokeholds at the federal level by classifying them as a civil rights violation. Another thing that could happen is you could establish a national registry of police misconduct that would be maintained by the Department of Justice. This doesn't take policing decisions away from local authorities, but it does reflect national sentiment on how policing should be done.
Democrats say that their proposed legislation, which was passing in the House, where Democrats dominate, would ban chokeholds, but the Republican bill would not. The Republicans say they did it in a more, if you will, elegant way by threatening to take money away from local governments and police forces if they do use chokeholds. So again, you had different approaches, a lot of words, and so far no progress. Hey, I want to fit in one other topic if we can. The firing of Jeffrey Berman, the top federal prosecutor in New York. He was given that job by President Trump 2 years ago. Now the president has fired Berman, who's been investigating several people close to President Trump. It was done in kind of a sloppy way. Berman refused to go, and then he was fired, and then he went. But at least he ensured that his deputy would remain in charge of prosecutions there. Linda Feldman, is this very significant, or just one of those incidents that's going to be forgotten? Because I know at the center of the controversy is Trump's attorney general, William Barr.
Right. So this is, first of all, I want to establish one thing. Donald Trump had every right to fire Jeffrey Berman. This idea that that's an abuse of power is just not true. Jeffrey Berman, as the U.S. attorney in Manhattan, the top federal prosecutor, served at the pleasure of the president. Now, did William Barr handle the effort to remove Jeff Berman from his position awkwardly? Yes, he did. But he wasn't trying to hide it. I mean, the way in which he did it was out in the open. I mean, he did it on a Friday night, which is typically where when things happen that are meant not to be noticed. But we in the news business are now used to watching Friday evenings for news. As with many things, Mr. Barr didn't handle it in the smoothest way, and you had some back and forth between him and the president. Is Jeff Berman fired? Is he not fired? So in the end, they got Berman out of there, but the compromise is that Berman's handpicked deputy is now handling that position. So the incident is over for now, but we'll see what this deputy ends up doing.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. Thanks to Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor. And you just heard Star Parker, radio and TV commentator, president of CURE, the Center for Urban Renewal and Education. This program is produced by the Voice of America. I'm Dan Revive.